Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Time for our parenting slot. Once again, Joanna Fortune joins us once again. A lot of questions. We're going to try and get through as many of them as we can in the next half hour. So, of course, sometimes we don't read out your question. And if you have sent in a question and we haven't read it out, part of the reason for that could be someone has sent in a similar question. So oftentimes we don't read out two questions if they're very similar to each other. Also, we would ask you, when you send in questions, try and keep them as short as possible. Sometimes we're sent in short stories. Really, it can run into hundreds, thousands of words sometimes. And so try and I know for many parents that kind of they're upset, but try and stick to the point as much as you can. Anyway, here's your first question, Joanna.
Okay.
I have twin girls of four. One of them has been saying she is a boy since she was two. Initially, I discounted it, but it is increasing in frequency. She attends a creche and her teacher said she persists with the same at school, so much so that she worries she will trouble the other children. Is it too early for her to be sure of her gender? I ask because I don't want to ignore this, but at the same time, she's very little. So far, she doesn't seem particularly bothered by girl or boy clothes or girl or boy toys. Myself and my husband disagree on how to manage this. I've decided to go along with her and not challenge her, as it just upsets her. My husband thinks I'm overreacting and that she's just a tomboy.
Yeah, I think it's a big question. There's a couple of things in here. I mean, the first thing I'm going to say is, you know, really to try and reassure. And when I say reassure, I mean reassure now that this isn't something parentally you have to take action on because she's 4 years old. I mean, she's a twin. Sometimes twins will try to look at when they have so much in common, what differentiates them and separates them out from each other. And that might be one contributing factor. The other thing overarching this, though, Sean, is that young children, and for young children, particularly this age, concepts of gender are really quite flexible for them. Before the age of five, children don't seem to think that gender has any permanence at all. So it's quite normal for some children to say, I'm a boy, I'm a girl, I want to be a boy, I want to be a girl, and to not mean anything other than that.
Yeah,
I just want to try that out. And it doesn't have any great meaning for them. So I'm not getting into a thing of, oh my goodness, you need to go down the road of gender dysphoria and things like that, because she's 4 years old. That being said, you know, I would neither ignore nor overreact to this. I would be more accepting, let her express it, let her try it out. Don't challenge her on it saying, no, you're not, you're a girl. Let her try it out, let her role play being a boy and choose the kind of clothing that she is comfortable in. And on that, you know, the parent here mentions about she's not bothered with girl-boy clothes or girl-boy toys. At the age of four, clothes are clothes and toys are toys.
Yeah.
And that girl-boy thing is something that we adults project onto children. That does not come from children. Stereotypical boys' clothing tends to be more comfortable at that age. Loose tracksuits, loose tops, as opposed to tight leggings and tight tops that is available in the more pinkified girl range. So I would be very much let her wear whatever she's comfortable in, play how she chooses and try it out. She is too young at this age to take it any further than that. But keep an open mind. If it was, and I suppose I'm being cognizant that there could be someone else listening who has a child older than four for whom this is an issue.
Yeah.
If that is the case and your child is older and coming to that preteen age and this has been going on, this is a persistent theme that they've been asserting this, it is okay to go to your GP, which is the starting point, actually, not that there's anything medically wrong, but a starting point for all referral systems. And there is a satellite clinic. It's just a day and a half a month. So there is a substantial waiting list in Our Lady's Hospital for Sick Children in Crumlin, which is run by the UK's Tavistock and Portman Clinic and their gender identity service. So there is a clinic and a service there, but it is through GP referral. Also, the organisation Transgender Equality Network Ireland, TENI, I don't know how they pronounce their acronym, they have a family database and could be of support to anybody who's sitting going, gosh, that's in my family and I need some help about what will I do, what will I say. And other than that, the other thing in this letter that stuck me was the creche conversation about how this might trouble other children. I'm not sure that I can relate to that properly understand
that's
that.
Mummies and daddies, maybe.
I think maybe, and actually maybe speak to the creche that this is just something that children quite naturally developmentally do, and maybe it's an opportunity to teach a lesson to preschoolers on tolerance and acceptance and how it's okay for people to be boys and girls and some people not to be sure, and just use it as a lesson in tolerance and acceptance. But overall, I would be quite relaxed about this at home if possible. There's nothing wrong.
Yeah. And yeah, there is nothing wrong.
Nothing wrong. Even if this persists, there's nothing wrong. There is a root for everything. And it is just about not making it such a big deal that she's like, oh, this is interesting. This gets quite a reaction from everybody.
But
saying, that's fine. You know, you can be who you want to be and you can dress how you want to dress and move on.
So at her age, it might mean something or it might not mean something.
But it's far too soon to tell.
It's far too soon to tell. Though, as you did say, that, you know, there may well be parents listening whose kids are a bit older than this. And from what I know of it, which probably isn't that much, I suppose, but the oftentimes, and when kids are identifying very strongly with a gender that isn't the one they were born into, the prospect of facing into puberty becomes extremely distressing
for them. Puberty is horrific for children who have gender identity, even questions or queries. And absolutely, I would be linking in with youth mental health services that can give you support around gender identity clinics and gender identity services, because puberty is horrific for all teenagers, but it's especially so if you have gender dysphoria or any other and any other gender manifestation like that.
Some of the other mothers at my daughter's school say they are no longer posting pictures of their kids on Facebook. I have a lot on my account. Now I'm worried. What advice do you have in relation to the posting on social media? Is it dangerous?
Okay, I'm going to try and stay in my professional hat and not my personal hat, because I do have views on this. So I'm going to share those. Is it dangerous? Potentially yes, potentially no, depending on how you understand your privacy settings and the terms and conditions of the platform you're posting on. I mean, I talk to teens a lot clinically about online behavior, about how keeping themselves safe online as part of other things. And invariably, those conversations come back to them suggesting I have the same chat with their parents about posting photos of them or their baby photos online. I think you've got to be really aware that children cannot give informed consent to share their image, their data online. And you are creating a digital footprint on their behalf before they can consent. So that is a fact. And if you're comfortable with that, then be sensible about it. Use your privacy settings. Really inform yourself and understand them. Turn off your geotagging. Don't post photos of your young children where a school crest is visible on their jumper, because you are making them identifiable, potentially to strangers, potentially to people who may do them harm. Just be sensible about it. Familiarize yourself with those terms and conditions, because once you post the photo on many social media platforms, you cease to own it. It now belongs to the platform. And how comfortable are you with that? And think before you post, what is embarrassing cute now? You know, oh, cute, embarrassing little photo could just be plain embarrassing in a few years for your child.
This is true.
And that's not okay. So, I mean, I would say, if you're asking me, do you think you should do it? I'm going to urge you not to do it. But if you choose to do it, and it is a parental choice for everybody, do it sensibly.
Mm-hmm. It's terrible that we live in a world where we have to even think about that.
I know. And yet we do. We really do.
Yeah, we do. No, well, I do know from, this is a few years ago, from my own daughters, from their social group, they knew, and they were teenagers, that suddenly one of them said, my photograph's on a Russian dating website.
I've had lots of those conversations.
And then when she asked around, she realised that loads of her friends, their pictures are on Russian dating websites.
Yeah, I've had teenagers. I did a school talk and a couple of the girls stayed back afterwards, which is always a sign they want to ask you a private question. And it actually pertained to their profile pictures on a particular platform had been taken and reposted on a pornographic site. And those photos were not posted with a pornographic intent. These were girls going, you know, on a social night out together. Young girls, 14 years old. And they had no way of getting that photo back.
No. You don't.
And so there is real considerations with this.
Our 3.5-year-old twin girls, more twins, have developed a phobia for wind, and we're looking for some advice. We remember the incident, it became encoded last year when she got a little fright from a shed door being flung open by a gust, but feels she's a little young for any major intervention and hope it will pass. However, she has daily meltdowns at creche and is sometimes afraid to venture out, even in mild weather, which is a pity, as she was a real outdoor explorer type.
Oh, it's just so unfortunate that something like that happens. And yet, how do you control the wind? I mean, you can't. This is one of those unexpected things. And I mean, young children respond with, you know, fright, startle reflexes to a sudden noise. You know, that's quite natural. They, you know, a sudden noise can provoke a big fright response in them. It's one of our most primitive reflexes when we feel suddenly insecure. And that's what's happened here. The wind coming suddenly, banging the door, has stimulated this primitive reflex. And now they associate wind with that uncomfortable, icky feeling. I mean, overall, fear is a healthy emotion. And it is generally associated with our safety, our well-being, and it keeps us safe because we have that fight or flight response when we experience fear. But that's something we grow and develop into. These are very young children we're talking about. I wouldn't let it go on too much longer, because the bit that jumps out at me is daily meltdowns. Like, that to me is quite concerning, because for a child to develop an anxiety or a fear around the wind at 3 years old, I take, you know, she's very young and you're hoping it'll pass. I would agree wholeheartedly with that. But if it's lingering and, you know, raising to daily meltdowns at creche, and now they're afraid to venture out even in mild weather, that would concern me. I would talk about the importance of wind. And, you know, these are 3 year old children, so you don't get now really scientific about it, but talk to them about the important good jobs that wind does. You know, it blows things along, it clears things out, it helps dry the laundry, things like that. Then I would probably involve them in making a fan, either get a fan or, better again, fold up a piece of paper and make a little fan and have them lie on the ground so that you can gently have a small breeze over them, building up to a big breeze and back down again. So they get to experience that the wind goes up and the wind goes down. Generally, some children are more innately cautious and need explanations and reassurance for these things, whereas another child could have experienced that and would be like, ugh, whatever.
Which seems to be the case there, because maybe I read that incorrectly, because it's one of our 3.5-year-old twins.
Yeah.
So one is able to go out and the other one is kind of scared indoors.
Yeah,
that's
so
shocking.
Some of that is a sensitive nature child. Yeah. So I would want to really explain about the wind, help them understand the wind, do games that you could put a feather onto the floor and get down on your tummy with her, and take turns blowing the feather from one end of the room to the other, because then you're practicing, look at the wind, we're using our wind, or things like that, and just try and work it through. If it was to linger any more than this, you might need to consider a consultation. But at 3.5, I'm going to be really honest with you, any kind of mental health consultation really should involve the parent. It should be a parent-child approach, because that's a very young child. I'd be thinking about somebody who practices joint parent-child type of therapy.
Yes.
And again, 3.5, change is very possible, very quick. I would imagine that it's a short intervention you're looking at, nothing long-term, but I would hate to see this develop into a phobia. I think you're probably at a heightened fear stage, but I wouldn't like to see it develop. So try the at-home stuff, education on wind, playing games about wind, and if it continues, and I mean, if it continues beyond another 6 weeks, I would act on it, because daily meltdowns are not good for any child.
Joanna Fortune is still with us. Some texts in reaction to some of the questions we had. The first one was about a little girl who at the moment is saying she feels like she's a boy. My beautiful daughter, who's now a blonde bombshell, thought she was a boy until she was 4. Then she did an overnight with friends who has girls. It all soon changed, says Steve. Another texter says, as a child, I used to like to play with the teapot and pots, and I like to wear my mother's high heels. I believe children should be permitted to express themselves. It's a perfectly healthy part of being a child, says the boy, and blanches down. Orla says, for that kid who's afraid of the wind, what about getting a toy like that makes the wind more fun? Yeah, I assume you mean something like a kite or something like that.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Sue says, my niece and later my grandson were terrified of the wind. Hysterical. I told them stories about the wind and how it liked to tickle their skin and play tricks on them. It worked. Now they love to run in the wind on the beach and park and tell their own stories, says Sue. Maybe that's worth a go too. Anyway, here's our next question. God, it's quite a long one.
Yeah.
I could really do with some advice on how to help my 11-year-old daughter with a very difficult friendship. She's become friends with a girl from Poland in the last 2 years. I don't have a lot of background on her, only from what she has told my daughter. This girl is fostered by her grandparents, as her mother is an alcoholic and her dad is not around. She has told my daughter that she has a very difficult relationship with her grandparents and that they don't really talk to her much about her feelings. They have a lot of play dates together, but most things are communicated through the friend, as our grandparents have no English. I've always found her to be polite and chatty in front of me and my husband. My real issue is that this girl has some problems that I feel my daughter is not equipped to deal with, although I'm helping her to work through them with her friend. I'm not sure if I'm doing the right thing, but I can't forbid the friendship, and I wouldn't do that as my daughter cares about her friend. She consistently tells my daughter that she's unhappy. She tells her that she doesn't realise how lucky she is to have a loving family, and she asks my daughter not to talk about her family as it is too upsetting for her. She also doesn't want my daughter to be friends with anyone else. Another issue is that she texts my daughter constantly asking for her for advice on boys. She has now declared her love for my son and constantly asks her, what is he doing now? Please tell me what he is wearing, what music he's listening to, etc. I have advised my daughter, Mary, that when it gets too much, she is to give me her phone and tell her friend that I've taken it from her and just take a break. I have spoken to the teacher and she is keeping an eye on them, and if my daughter ever feels overwhelmed, she will step in. I am also concerned about her, as she is now going to need help, and I don't know how to deal with that either. Any advice would be really appreciated.
I mean, there's so much in this.
Wow.
So, I mean, in the opening piece, this girl is fostered. My question is she officially fostered, like through the system, and is that through the Irish system? Because if so, there would be a social worker involved, and there would certainly be an option to link in with social services there. And I'm just going to continue that point a little bit, because a lot of what's in here does point to this person writing the letter clearly has some welfare concerns, not child protection, but welfare concerns for this young girl. So if she is in the care of anyone but her parents and is fostered, I think you could actually call your duty social worker in your local health centre, and anyone can call ask to speak to the duty social worker and get advice. So you don't have to make a report, but you can get advice that this is the situation. And you could say that you have a child welfare concern and you're wondering what to do. The other thing is, and I know you've spoken to the teacher about it, and the teacher's keeping an eye, my understanding reading this is keeping an eye on them as friendship in the class. There may be a role for the school to take a more active role in this, that if this young girl is describing a lot about being unhappy and feeling her needs are not met and she's not being supported, maybe the school also need to step in and have a meeting with her grandparents. I don't know if it's possible for this parent to speak with the grandparents, and they certainly need to do it through a Polish speaker and not this girl translating for her grandparents, which complicates it further. But yes, I mean, you're saying your real issue is the girl has problems that your daughter's not equipped to deal with. You're absolutely right. This is way
she's
beyond.
She's obviously depending on her
completely.
Huge amount.
This is developmentally way beyond the scope of an 11-year-old, and they're both 11-year-olds, so it's beyond both of their scope. I would suspect and certainly infer that the declared love of your son is perhaps seen as a route into your family and a way of being a part of your family that she has idealized in her head. And I think, you know, she's lucky and your daughter's lucky that you are there trying to negotiate and meander the two of them through it. Advising your daughter that when it's too much to give you her phone is really good advice, and stick with that. But I do think this is probably getting beyond all of you. And you're either going to continue with this without it getting better, but continue kind of problem solving in the moment, or you're going to have to involve a third party to get some extra support for this girl. And one way or another, it sounds like she does need support. So if she is fostered, link in with social services, even if that's a sort of unofficial family arrangement, you know, that the grandparents have simply taken on a care role, get some advice from a duty social worker about getting some family support for them, because I don't know anything about her grandparents, about their age, about anything else, but this little girl may need a little bit more support than that, but it's certainly beyond the scope of an 11-year-old to get her through it.
Yeah. Crikey, yeah.
Yeah.
And now, in fairness, she's doing it. This mother is doing a fantastic job.
Oh, a great
job.
Yeah, absolutely. And everything she's doing is right, and keep doing that. It's just that I would say more is needed.
Yeah, absolutely. My 7-year-old daughter reacts very strongly to disappointments, upsets, and even changes in tone of voice. For example, she didn't do as well as she would have liked in a gymnastics competition yesterday and responded with, "I wish I was dead. Nobody likes me. Can you get someone to kill me?" She's an only child and states she is lonely. She has recently been diagnosed with celiac disease and is struggling a little with this also. Any advice greatly appreciated?
Yeah, I mean, this one is difficult because, I mean, what you're describing, these kind of very strong overreactions to something like disappointments, while that's very normal for, say, a 3-year-old child to react that way, we really wouldn't expect a 7-year-old to react that way. We would expect them to be able to manage their emotions better than this, even if they're not happy, that they actually can then still cope with that disappointment. So while it's not usual behaviour, I would still say it is within the scope of normal behaviour, just to reassure you on that. Emotions can be very big and scary things for children. So breaking it down for them a bit using what I'd call emotion parts language. So if you're saying something like, "I hear your disappointed part right now," and it's because, and you make sense of it for them, and it's because you really worked so hard in the competition and it didn't go the way you wanted it to do, and that's your disappointed part. Now I wonder what we could do together to get your happy part out, or to get your relaxed part out, or whatever part you need in that moment. But you're letting her know that disappointment is one feeling she has and does not describe her as a whole. So you're letting her know, if you can feel disappointment, you can also feel something else, but there is a way that we can do that together. Encourage her to express her feelings to you as an empathic listener, so that you're there and available to her. But because this seems to be not just because of one gymnastics competition, but something that reoccurs, I would develop a mantra that she could hold in mind. Now, something like this, you could put your own spin on it, but something like, "Everything will be okay in the end. And if it's not okay, that's because it's not the end."
Right.
So that she knows that it's valid to feel what I'm feeling, but that's because it hasn't worked itself out yet, and it will get better. If you can get her to memorize something like that, and that when these feelings start to come up, you say to her, "What's your line?" Hold it in your mind, say it over and over, to try and keep her in the moment and relax her. And of course, when a child is that distressed, you hold them, soothe them, empathize. But ultimately, when you've done that, try and redirect them, bring their focus onto something more positive. Generally, I would say, and I'm not assuming this parent isn't doing it because they seem to be very in tune with the child's emotional states about it, is that you want to, really empathize, really redirect, but also look at it globally. Is this a predominant feeling, or is this something that's only coming up once or twice? So use it when it comes up. Focus very much on efforts over outcome, that you praise her efforts in every endeavor. And not that you're disinterested in the outcome, but you're more interested in how hard she worked.
Yeah.
So when you praise her, even if she wins first prize at gymnastics, rather than say, "You won, great," say something like, "You really focused so hard. I could see how hard you were concentrating. I know how much you trained for this. I'm so proud of you." But your praise is on the effort, not the outcome. That helps them manage when they don't win. A couple of books I'm going to throw out there that might be helpful for this parent, because if this is a child where they tend to feel more of towards the negative spectrum of feelings, there is a book called Freeing Your Child from Negative Thinking. It's by Tamar Chansky. Or Dan Siegel has a book called The Whole Brain Child that helps you understand how these negative emotions can manifest, but also gives you some practical tools as to what you can do as a parent when it comes up.
Yeah.
So that might be helpful. And again, I'm picking up, you know, you've got celiac disease. She's struggling with this. She's saying she's lonely. She's a single child. She has all these big disappointment feelings. She's just getting a little emotionally overwhelmed. So trying to slow it down using your parts language is going to help.
Right. Just referring back to those kids are scared of the wind. Someone says, "I was really afraid of tractors and large farming machinery as a young child in the 90s. I never said this to my parents, and lo and behold, I got over it. I'm sure the 3-year-old will grow out of his or her fear of wind. I can't imagine them being afraid of it on their way to work when they're older. I'm a mother myself, and sometimes you have to brush off the little fears as a normal part of childhood."
It's the daily meltdowns. I'm going to challenge you a little bit on this, because generally I think you've got some good advice there, you know, that don't make a big thing out of everything. Don't pathologize every little thing a child has. I would totally agree. But this isn't a little thing. It's going on quite a while and it's resulting in daily meltdowns. So it's a little bit more serious than that.
Yeah. Now, a question probably a lot of parents have sent in over the years in one form or another. How do you tell a child how to stand up for themselves? My son is struggling in school with being picked on, and as a single mother, I don't know what advice to give him. I have told him to tell the teacher or tell them to stop, but this seems to have made things worse. What do I do?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you being a single mother is going to make this harder or easier, other than perhaps, you know, my question is, have you someone in your life to support you, to support him, you know, just to bounce things off? I think that's really important. I think you're right, Sean. This is something that everybody has experienced in varying degrees at some point in childhood, because we're really talking about how do you raise an emotionally resilient child?
Yeah.
And that's actually something we all go through and we all wonder. I would say that I really want to pick up on that your son is struggling in school with being picked on. If that is an active occurrence and it's a struggle he's having, you do need to involve the school, because they probably have a system in place. They probably have a policy about all of this. I don't want to make the assumption it's bullying. It could be something else. It could be peer relationships are an issue, but the school may be in a position to offer you some more tangible support. Otherwise, a really practical thing to do is role play things at home with him. So tell him that you're going to imagine a scenario that you know has happened. And imagine I'm in the playground with you and I'm your friend, let's call me so-and-so, pick a name, don't pick a real name, don't make it too direct, pick a name and say, now I want you to tell me what you're going to do if this happens. Let your child do it to the best of their ability and then say, oh, you really worked hard at that. Now we're going to flip roles and this time you be the other person, I'm going to be you. And you then offer other responses that shows them that there are other choices. Bear in mind, when you do something like that, children don't just see that done once and say, great, I have that now, thanks, it's nailed. They learn through repetition. So you're going to have to repeat that activity, possibly even daily, for anything up 5 to 10 days, so that they can really integrate it. And when the situation happens in school, they have that to default to. I know what to do in this because I've done it over and over and over. Aside from role play, you can also use a system like that I would call social stories, where you get little small world characters, little miniatures, and play out a scenario, but play it out in a positive way. So play it out like you believe he should react. So not what he shouldn't do, but what he should do. And play it out no more than 5 minutes long, and play it again exactly the same way for at 5 to 10 consecutive days, so that he can internalize that is solution focused way of looking at it.
Say mom here doesn't really know what he should say. Because I think more parents than they'd like to admit don't know, because, you know, people tend to go for kind of ignore them or tell the teacher or you know,
hit them back.
Telling the teacher or hit them back. And a lot of those things might well make it worse.
No, I agree. And I think that's why, you know, at the start I was picking up on her saying, you know, I'm a single mother. It is important that as parents we have a support network. And if you have somebody you can bounce this off, do that. And if not, or if you're not comfortable doing that within your own family or friend network, involve the school. And be clear that you're not going into the school to make a complaint or to allege anything, unless there is something to allege. But based on this, I'm saying, you know, if there isn't something, just say that you want some advice and support about how can you support your son to handle this situation. And I imagine the school are in a position to offer you that support. But absolutely, we all need support getting through these things. This is not something that, you know, children don't come with a manual saying, when this happens, here's what you do. A lot of us are working it out as we go along. So it is okay to ask for help. And particularly, you know, if this is something that's quite triggering for you as an adult, and it can be for us as parents, especially if you experience something like this as a child yourself. And I mean that not for this person, but anyone listening, it is okay to say, oh my goodness, this is my nightmare. I really didn't want this to happen to my child. What will I do about it?
Yeah. Someone suggested send them to karate class. It gave me confidence, but I suffered huge bullying as a teenager.
Yeah, I mean, the word bullying hasn't been used here,
no,
so I just want to emphasise that. But
yeah.
I think that's a really good, I mean, karate is very disciplined. It's very boundaried. It's about, you know, taking leadership from the voice in charge, but also being feeling confident in your body and yourself.
Yeah.
So that can be a really good thing to do. And if not karate, something like that, a hobby that puts them in touch with children who have shared interests, be that drama club, karate, running, football, whatever it might be. But they've now got open access to new children who share an interest with them.
Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. Gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.